This is the Roaring Elephant podcast, and we're back again, and we're doing our best to be the hairiest podcast on the internet today.
Yeah, okay.
Almost made them swallow there. Oh, God. With this kind of high-level humor, good thing you're not relying on us for today for quality entertainment. Content, entertainment, yeah, same thing. We're joined again by our guest, Chris Berg from Data Kitchen, to talk to us more about data ops and data ops tooling.
Indeed. The world of data engineering brought to life through Chris's experiences. And without further ado, let's jump into the final part.
Yeah, so you've almost got this kind of situation where the data teams, you've got the external pressure that they have no control over, like the business demanding the results. You've got the fact that they're often out of sync or out of the loop with the software engineering teams. Software engineering teams are making changes all the time, but they're not thinking about kind of the data teams. And then you've got the fact that the data teams themselves are operating in often like more of a chaos-driven situation. And that's like those three factors come together to create this perfect storm where like the data organizations are in this constant like fight or flight sort of kind of situation. So that's, as a summary, kind of that's why the top down is so difficult and makes it so kind of challenging, because solving those three kind of problems from a top down perspective just incredibly difficult to influence those wildly different areas. Like the kind of the team dynamic, you know, less chaotic, is influenced by the fact that there is all of this business pressure and by the fact that, you know, the data team is out of sync with the development side of the organization. So when you flip this on its head and you're approaching this from bottoms up and you're talking about tooling to provide observability into the data, how does that shift this dynamic? How does that kind of start to generate more of like a positive kind of continuously like reinforcing kind of situation?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So how does observability drive this kind of behavior change?
Yeah.
Well, if you can find problems before your customer and quantify those, then they're not hidden anymore. And you can then start taking the shame away from finding permanent fixes to those problems. You can push back and improve the source data quality. You can push back on people who are releasing code into production that's not tested. And so it gives you a lever. Think of it as an influence lever. Like I don't know if we've got enough evidence to show this, to be blunt, from our open source has only been out for 2 or 3 months, so this is kind of me speculating. But if you believe in the principles, you need evidence-based levers to make change. And so finding constant problems and showing them to people in a way can give you that lever to talk to your boss, your managers, that we keep doing the same dumb thing. We're putting data out there to our customers that's just wrong. Here's the report. Our data quality scores are crap. We're late every time. Airflow keeps breaking on us. We don't get the exports to Power BI. And so here's the data that to show it up. And I think that it provides a possible way, a remedy to do it. Because once you find it, you can then have the say, let's fix it, right? So this doesn't happen. Mm. And it takes something that's invisible and makes it visible. Because problems in an organization that's kind of crushed, the shame and blame emotion gets there and people just don't want to think about it. Like yeah. the I don't want to know is there. And so my hope and the theory is that you plug these open source tools and they make some stuff visible, and then people will start to say, wow, this is really embarrassing. Let's fix it. Instead of it just sort of sweeping it under the rug.
Yeah.
That's the theory. Yeah. I'm hoping.
I think someone said, I can't remember the exact phrase, but it's something along the lines of sunlight is the best disinfectant, or just opening something up, like shedding light on it and like properly just investigating what's going on, like getting some empirical measurement of the quality of what's being done, understanding the kind of the problems and the things that you can do to address it. When you talk about the open source projects, maybe this is a good time to kind of pivot more into that. You know, what are the kind of key pieces that, you know, someone would need to understand to be able to like implement something like this using the projects you've just released?
Well, you need access to a database, right? And mm-hmm. So we only do SQL databases, and we only do four or five of them, right? So you have a bunch of data in your database tables. And mm-hmm. So the first thing is you want to be able to point something at it and then have it, and I don't know, that sounds facetious, but like use a little smarts to understand the data and recommend a whole bunch of checks on it, right? So, okay, if you get some new data, like there's really obvious stuff. You look at a table and there's a column and it's only got five values in it. Okay. You get an update. There's a sixth value. Is that a problem? Is that not a problem? It really depends, but you should know about that.
Yeah.
Because if you don't, your customer is going to be upset, right? You're constantly getting 1,000 new rows, but suddenly you get 10,000. Problem? Not problem. Mm-hmm. You should know about that, right? Again, think of it as anomaly detection or data quality variation. Mm-hmm. That's really important. And then, when you get a new set of data from someone, a lot of times data teams, as you said, there's a lot of data out there. They've got to bring in new data. They don't understand it. So they do something called profiling, which our tool does. And then also you've kind of got to do a hygiene assessment on the data. Like sometimes you get a column and what's supposed to be null has the word null. Sometimes it has NA, sometimes it has ZZZ, and sometimes it's just blank. And so you have to either patch it or push back on the data provider.
Yeah.
Or let it through, right? And you should know about that stuff. Because what happens is if you don't, you're all proud that you've got this new data ingested. Maybe you joined it with a different table. And then a data scientist goes, this is weird. And then you're chasing your tail, or someone pivots it in Tableau and they're like, why is there ZZZ and NA and blanks? I can't get my market segmentation. And then you're feeling bad, right? And so if you can just have a little helper that helps you check the data as it's being ingested. And so we do that. We have a tool called Data Quality Test Gen. It generates data quality tests automatically. And then the second thing is people, data and analytic systems aren't a monolith. They're a distributed system composed of subcomponents, databases, ETL tools, BI tools. Sometimes there's 10 tools that people are running, different processes that are linked. And so that journey through those processes acting on data, we have another tool that observes that, and we have this idea of a data journey that is sort of the fire alarm control panel for all your processes, including those data quality tests. Because we think you want to know about problems before your customer. Problems could be because you've gotten crappy data, or you've joined it to some other table and it looks weird, or your server just fell off the bed, or your process is taking too long. And all those things are just fail cases. And so we just have a way for you to solve that. And again, we don't fix it. right? We just say, here it is. So it is that kind of disinfectant through sunlight idea that that it gives people quantitative leverage to say, here's the problem. And then managers can then say, okay, I've found these problems. And then if my team is fixing those problems, like patching the schema change, you can start to quantify that effort. And we don't do that, but like we've had customers quantify the effort their team has done to fix the crappy data or the servers. And then the managers can go saying, look, this many errors, this much time, this is why we're not getting stuff done.
Yeah.
And then it's levered. And so my hope is we can start small and get people leverage to make change and fight back. Because otherwise they're just going to continue to be in this situation.
Yeah. Like if you can't.
Is that illegal or am I fanciful?
Yeah. No, I think it makes a lot of sense. Like the ability for people to give like some sort of concrete data on a particular situation is causing this team to expend a whole bunch of manual effort and labor that is, let's face it, relatively low value because of this situation, which could be like system spewing bad data coming in. Like if we can fix this upstream, then team doesn't need to spend this, you know, giant bucket of hours doing this low value like patching of data, futzing around with data or that sort of thing, and can instead spend its time like answering the questions that the business wants to answer with the data. I think it makes perfect sense.
Yeah, and I think the sort of they're quantitative people in data and analytic teams, but the running of data and analytic teams is entirely anecdotal and unquantitative. And it's amazing how many chief data officers don't know how many pipelines are running, don't know how many errors they have, don't know if they've met their SLA. They don't know how much work is being done. They don't measure productivity. They don't measure error rates. They don't measure deploy cycle times. So like the DORA metrics that happen in software, right? That sort of thing is, it's not there. Like it's just not, they don't know how to measure their teams, but they do know how to measure getting yelled at. And so just the amount of getting yelled at is less. Like if you could just tone that down a bit, then I think that's a pretty thing easy to measure. Is like your leader gets yelled at less, and they're, you know, and like we've had customers say, I never get yelled at, and I have my once a year problem that we didn't catch, but like I have to this is the first time in my career I've got to actually I got to innovate to be noticed. Which is like exactly what you want, right? You don't be noticed because you're screwing up. You want to be noticed because like you're doing cool stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's almost like the if you can kind of flip the script on this to get to the point where it's like in the software world, you think of like SLOs and error budgets. Like you want to get to the point where like the data engineering part of the organization can figure out, okay, like the software team made a whole bunch of changes upstream, like fixing that burnt a bunch of our error budget, which means like we need them to like, you're back to a little bit on honestly of this like feedback loop of like almost having like a shared error budget between like the data engineering team and the DevOps and software engineering team. Like they you need to get to the point where like these two sort of parts of the organization are operating in more of like symbiosis rather than kind of working against each other almost.
Yeah, and sort of like ostriches with their head in the sand, right? Because I think just counting errors we're a profitable company, so we have software that we sell, and you know we're hoping to make money off the open source, so we haven't made a dime yet, but we also do sort of management consulting, and so like one company, they, you know, people go in and they build these things, they go really fast. They take data, they ingest data, they build applications of it, and then stuff starts breaking. Like, got an email yesterday from one of our consultings. The guy went on vacation.
Mm.
And no one, something broke and no one knew what to do with it. And so, like, they had to call him off vacation. He had to go and fix some stuff. And then they're all worried he can't ever leave. And so they're like, you know, we have these unicorn heroes who are just absolutely necessary. And they're kind of the, they're basically the bottlenecks, right? Their theories of constraint bottleneck. They're the heroes. And they, it's great when it works. Like, it's wonderful if you have a hero and they do everything. The problem is heroes quit and they want to go on vacation.
They quit. They burn out. Like, it's not something it's certainly not scalable. Like, you can't, what do you do when you've got that one heroic person? Cloning is unfortunately still not quite there yet. So that's not an option. And you're also potentially at the point where you're setting basically unreasonable expectations of everything else. And that's the kind of like almost negative reinforcement. Like, you're starting to build, by buying into that sort of hero side of things, you're starting to kind of set a more of a negative precedent within the organization without even necessarily realizing it.
Yeah, and that's like back in 2002, the first time I got exposed to Agile was our architect on our team was like, I don't want to do this anymore. Mm. this is just not working. We need to start iterating faster and automating and doing all this stuff. And like, I think that's where I think people who have, if you are a person who is the hero in your organization, and you are burnt out, don't quit and go on to the next job, because sexy tech doesn't get you. It sounds like it'll get you another job, but you're just going to have new tech and recreate the same thing. Mm. And unfortunately, all this data modernization and move to cloud has just taken, I had hoped it would be a great chance to adopt data ops and agile and DevOps principles, but it hasn't. They've just recreated it in a new place. And so I think these sort of architects, leaders, heroes, start fixing your own team instead of job hopping and recreating another hairball and then job hopping again. You're not helping your career, and you're just sort of leaving a mess behind. And it's a emotionally hollow way to go. And I realized I did that in my career, honestly, with software, and it's kind of fun for a while, but it you talk to the people after you leave and they're just all cursing you, right?
Yeah.
And building well-engineered systems is part of your job as a technical leader. And so to me, I think that's where I would like those people to say, no, I'm not going to leave. I'm going to fix this. And here's some evidence as to what we need to do to fix it. And here's a tool I have. And here's all the problems we have in our data. Here's all the problems we have in our operations on the data. And look, let's fix those first. And then go on to the, because like in software, the real value is, can you iterate? Can you do a little bit of work and get it out in front of your customer? Like, the real value is in iteration. And you can't iterate when things are breaking left and right. So it's as much as like, if you solve that problem, if you build it right, you build it so you can like have a 23-year-old make a small change and do that in development, you're like, your life is so much better. Like, that's the right way. Yeah. And there's very, like, we built a orchestration tool to do that. There's very few orchestration tools that really do that. There's some, like, I think Dagster's the closest one I can think of that's got that approach, but like, really, that's the problem you need to get to. But let's start with like just not, killing yourself nights and weekends.
Yeah, if you get to the point where, because like looking at the whole kind of thing, you've got sort of two very different perspectives on this. Like, you've got the process that you're trying to put in place and like observing that process and like being able to figure out when things have changed or error rates are rising and that sort of thing, like is one kind of perspective. Like personally, that's my kind of worldview of things. Like another view and another perspective is to think about, you know, the data engineering group as a product or as a service, and you know they've got kind of multiple different customers and they're trying to find their product market fit, and you've got the customer of the business that are asking the questions, you've got other customers which are the kind of software engineering folks that are producing the systems that are creating the data. And like these views, you know, they're not against each other. Like these are it's the same kind of concepts, just viewed a different way. So do you think the observability side of it and the orchestration kind of deals very closely with the process type view of things? But how do you think you can kind of get the kind of the data engineering side of things thinking about thinking of themselves as the product and thinking about their customers and how to manage customers, because that in itself is kind of an art form of itself.
Yeah, I mean, I think like the Mick Kirkston book, The Projects to Products, the idea of software products and software product teams, those are really good ideas, and having people being focused on their customer and that their happiness comes from customer deliverables. I totally believe that, right? And I think the mechanization of deployment and observability are sort of tools to get there. Unfortunately, and this is gonna sound wicked cynical, I think the enterprise software industry and data and analytics is a disinformation machine.
Mm.
And every concept gets distorted into buy my tool.
Yeah.
So I was, as evidence, I was in several months ago, I was in at a chief data officer conference, and they were talking about data products. And I sat there and I listened to them for 20 minutes, and all they were talking about was kind of data virtualization and lake data lake houses. They were talking about technology instantiation. And I'm like, I'm sorry. I said to what you're doing, none of it makes sense to me. Data products are a how, not a what, right? It's how you deliver value to your team. Who cares about what is, whether you do it through lake houses or virtualizations. And so I think the sort of vendor industrial concept, and what's happened is, honestly, there's a lot of terms that have been taken from software, like data ops, like stolen from software and put into data. Like I did that with data ops. There was one called data mesh, which is a domain driven design. Data products is another one. Observability is another one. And a lot of these terms get thrown into the mill, and then the marketers say, they write an article and then they say buy our product at the end. And so, the linkage between that concept of data ops or observability or data products is so thin. The vendor disinformation thing is so strong. The conceptual pollution is so strong, that it's hard for people to understand. And as an engineer who's tried to popularize one concept, data ops, and written books and manifesto, it frustrates me, but I guess that's the way it works, and we've got to sort of get through that. So I agree that people should be thinking in product teams and deliverables. They should be thinking in value delivery, and value streams, and mapping their value streams, and all that stuff that comes from software. But like, it doesn't happen.
There's a big gap to fill.
And like there's companies like they have a master data management tool, but suddenly you go to their websites, we're the data products company. Like you do master data management, you help people reconcile two records that are like each other. How is that data products? It's like, why are you even using that term?
So, well, I mean, it's no different from like any of the various kind of washing experiences we've had in IT over the last few decades, like, I don't know, virtualization washing, AI washing, you know, big data washing, like now everything's LLM and that sort of thing, yeah, crypto washing, blockchain washing, I think is Jan's favorite one. But, you know, just like everything, whatever the hot thing is, like every product out there has like whatever the cool trendy thing is, that's front and center in all the marketing blurb. And you're right, like the figuring out what does this actually do, what can this actually do for me, like how would I use this is the far more kind of, that's the thing that you need to figure out, because it's definitely not, oh, I just buy this, I just plug this into my, you know, my data environment and it magically fixes the problems for me, because that's just not the way any of this stuff has ever worked, frankly.
yeah, and never will, right? And
yeah.
Gen AI included, right? There's no,
yep.
There's no magic tool, right? And so you have to do the work. I think as people get older, they get more experienced in the sort of, you know, as you say, the sort of BS zone around any technology. Mm-hmm. But I think it seems to be a little bit harder because people believe it more for some reason. I don't know why, but like I've had plenty of people, they come in and they just reiterate Gartner buzzwords and they're mm-hmm. serious about it. Sometimes they reiterate a whole bunch of, and I think they're joking. Like it sounds so false. And then they're serious about it. I'm like, okay, you just said a bunch of conjunctions with buzzwords in between and you have no idea what you're saying.
yeah all too sadly frequent, I'm afraid. So maybe I know we're coming up on time, but what one thing that might be useful is just a little bit about the open source projects that you've released on GitHub. Like what are they called, how should people think about them? How should people get started? What's some good resources to kind of look up around them?
Yeah, so I think they're on GitHub, so they're Apache 2.0, so they're open source, and they're completely open source for one user. So they're completely full featured. They're not hobbled. They have a UI yeah. and a back end, and yeah. so we have what's called an installer that installs two products. And if you click on that, the first product is what we call data quality test gen. And it's the thing that sits on your data and tells you if there's something wrong over time. And then the second is data observability, which sits on your tools and tells you if something's wrong with your tools over time, like your ETL tools or your BI tools. You can use them independently or you can use them together. So for instance, you know, we have a customer using observability. They have their own, it's like product data for manufacturing. They have their own kind of ETL process. It's all custom. And then they just sort of shove events and test results into observability and they get notifications. And, you know, it's a basic idea of like, instead of pouring through thousands of log files, you have a UI and a notification that tells you it's observability adapted to the data world with lots of tools and change. And then data quality test gen does exactly what it says. It assesses your data quality and then generates data quality tests for you that you can run over time. And they're Python tools. We also have training. So we have two books. We also have, we did a data quality and observability training, 7 hours for free, trains on the tools and trains on the ideas. We also have a data ops training. So it's, I'm excited about it. You know, we don't have a lot of GitHub stars yet. So mm-hmm. I can't make this claim that we're like, it's a movement, but like we're trying and like, you know, perhaps we shouldn't have spent all these millions of dollars developing and giving it away. My wife still kicks me sometimes saying, why did you do that? Why don't we just like have a nicer car? but I'm still hopeful that both people will use it and that we can build a profitable business off of it, because we've always been a profitable company and we're not I'm also kind of cynical around VCs and investors. So that's a separate discussion. But we're excited about it. We've been building it over the last several years and have customers using it. So it's a good thing. Nice. So give it a try. Try the installer. Get on our Slack channel. We'll support you in hopes that someday you'll pay us money. But you don't have to.
Fantastic. Well, we'll add some links into the show notes and into the YouTube comment, into the YouTube description as well. So you'll have that for those following along. And you know, I think as you kind of said towards the beginning, like Data Kitchen itself has undergone like quite an evolution by the sounds of things. You know, what's next? What does the future hold?
Well, I'm 60, right? So I'm old. I'm like a dog, like on holding a rope. I want to see these agile data ops ideas happen. And yep. So we're just going to keep at it, right? And so we're going to do consulting. We're going to support our open source. We're just going to keep at it. And I think it just sucks if you don't. Yeah. And so it's taking a lot longer than I thought, to be honest, but I'm probably going to be talking about the same thing 5 years from now. So at some point I'm going to quit and just say, hand it off to some other people. But the good news is there's 10, 15 observability companies, data observability, data quality companies out there, maybe 20. So open source, closed source, proprietary, that's a really good thing, right? And they're talking about it and it didn't happen. And tools like dbt, people are writing SQL using Git. That's a good thing. Right. And I used to go to conferences 9 years ago. 5% of the people knew what Git is. Nobody knew what CI and CD is. The term observability was like unknown. Right. Mm-hmm. And so these terms are, and data products, like even though the bullshit machine has those terms, the terms are getting out there. Yeah. People are seeing through it and they're understanding the principles underneath. And so observability, data mesh, data ops, they're all getting there. And so I'm optimistic that, and also the amount of data teams, I think, have gone through this big kind of bloom of growth. And I don't think, and people are starting to realize that like, hey, we're a 200 person company. We don't need a 20 person data team. Like, well, that makes no sense. Why do we have so many people doing this?
I love it.
Yeah, it's great.
I love it. I love the fact that you're kind of being the change you want to see in the world. I think that's incredibly admirable. And I think if anyone out there is looking for some answers to their data engineering challenges, and they like the sound of this, where's the best place to reach you? You mentioned Slack. Is that kind of the best place to go?
Open source for Slack, or just go to datakitchen.io, hit contact us, hit me, cberg at datakitchen.io. Always happy to talk. We have people who, from our sort of management consulting, we do a lot of 1 hour, 1.5 hour data ops best practices for people remotely. I'm happy to do my charming personality for your team if you're looking for that. I think we'll keep at it. And there's a lot of people who are on the same, who are on the same idea in different ways. So I think younger people are less likely to they don't want to like live with these us burnt out, I guess, baby boomers or Gen X people. They're like, oh, I don't do that. you guys ruin the planet. You're not going to ruin my work life.
Yeah, the main thing is that at least you don't feel like you're just screaming into the void. Like there's lots of other folks standing right next to you also screaming into the void, so you're not alone.
I'm there's a crowd of people now on the median yelling at cars instead of just me, so that's
there good. You go. It's hey, sometimes it's all the improvement we can get.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, Well, and thank you for the opportunity. So always fun to talk to you guys. And hopefully I wasn't too cynical. I'm trying to be better.
We love a healthy dose of cynicism here on the Roaring Elephant podcast. So, you know, absolutely, Chris, you fit right in. And yeah, thank you for sharing some of your insights, some of the war wounds and some of the stories. And yeah, exciting to see what Data Kitchen is building today.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, cheers. Well, I think certainly really appreciated catching up with Chris. Definitely, as we mentioned last episode, a lot has changed since 2019. And
the world stays the same.
Yeah, I was going to say, and like, even those things that have changed, like some of them not really for the better. There's definitely a lot of work to be done in the data ops, kind of data engineering space to make it, frankly, by the sounds of it, like a lot better place to be. But Chris has some ideas, he has some thoughts, and he's shared them with us. So let's see. Maybe we will catch up with him in the future and see if he's managed to make an impact on things.
Yeah, big thanks to Chris for his passion for the whole data ops movement, because he's been doing it for a long time and doesn't look like he's going to stop anytime soon because people still need him.
Indeed. Well, with that, anything else from you, Jan?
Nope.
All right. Well, in that case, that is all the time we have for today. You can support this podcast by becoming a patron. Every contribution really does help. We are on YouTube. You can like, subscribe, hit the notification bell, see our happy, shiny, hairy faces, and do all the YouTube things. You can also go to roaringelephant.org for a link to our Patreon page and for more information about the podcast. Send your feedback to podcast@roaringelephant.org. Until next time, my name is not as hairy as Jan, Dave.
And my name is Let's Invent Jan Ops, because why not?
Definitely Jan needs ops. And we look forward to talking to you next week.
Goodbye.
See you then.